Hello, I'm Andrew, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 15th of May, 2024.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacons. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD, simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have myself, Andrew, Angela, Ian, Christine, Helen, Mina, Pete, Simon, and of course, not forgetting, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have the latest update from Helen, from cheerleading well-doers, and what's lurking in our sewers. We have the latest news for the Black Country, the quiz with Mina. There's plenty of tension in our football news for West Brom and Wolves. A Did You Know section from Flashback Roger. And after a week of warm weather, we hear from Mina, who has the latest forecast for the week ahead. And here's one for you. With all this warm, sunny weather we're having, what kind of fruit salad is the most resistant to sunburn? The kind with extra melanin. Oh dear, I guess you could say that joke was unbearable. Oh dear, they're getting as bad as mine and that's saying something. On which note, we have another famous bake-along session, baked fruit salad, for you too. Local news to start though with Ian, Christine, but first, Angela.
The West Midlands new mayor, Richard Parker, has vowed to focus on issues affecting people in the Black Country on his first official day in the job. He was welcomed by the West Midlands Combined Authority last week after putting an end to Andy Street's 7-year reign. In an exclusive interview with the Express and Star, he said that people in the Black Country have been overlooked for too long, and he'll have a particular focus on the region's youth, who he believes are not afforded what they need to make a success of their life. He also plans to have a mayoral base in the Black Country so that he can operate from it and have greater focus on the issues facing people who live in the area. Mr. Parker takes the reins after being selected as the West Midlands Labour candidate for mayor in April 2023 over Birmingham City Councillor Nicky Brennan. He successfully unseated Andy Street last week, winning by 1,508 votes and ending the Conservative 7-year stint in the city. Included in the Labour man's manifesto is a push to create 150,000 jobs and training opportunities across the region, revitalise high streets, bring control of buses back to the public, and fix the housing crisis along with its rogue landlords. Speaking on his new role and his plans going forward, he said, "It's been a long time since I walked into a new job, but it has been fantastic. I've been given a great welcome by the team here, a great induction, and we've spoken about how we'll work together over the next few years. We have a joint plan on how to deliver on my new manifesto." Mr. Parker said he wants to run the ship very differently from the last mayor. He said, "I have a different set of priorities and I want to do things differently to the last mayor. I'm really pleased that the offices here are prepared for that. We've made a great start today." One of his key pledges is to bring buses back into the control of the public while making transport easier and cheaper for all who use it. He went on to discuss some key issues that he hopes to tackle now that he can implement what he thinks will improve the quality of life for people living in the West Midlands. One of his major promises is to reimagine the current system behind public buses and bring them back into public control with a franchise system. He said, "We want people to find it much easier to get to work, school and the doctors cheaper and more easily." As well as public transport, he also reminded his constituents of his social housing plans, where he hopes to deliver a programme bigger than anything the region has seen for four decades. "We're going to deliver the biggest programme of social housing the region has seen in over 40 years, and we'll redeploy the resources that the former mayor used in a way that works for our new plans." On the issue of crime, he confirmed that he would be meeting the re-elected Labour Police and Crime Commissioner, Simon Foster. "I want to see how we can work together collectively to address the issues on the ground with how we deliver resources and the way we focus on policy priorities."
And a project imbued with revitalising new life and vitality will see a series of steel sculptures given a home inside a Black Country roundabout underpass. The monumental new steel sculptures will be set up in the Chapel Ash underpass in Wolverhampton and unveiled with performances from local musicians, poets and dancers on Sunday, May 19th as part of the Roundabout Project. Funded by Arts Council England, Wolverhampton Council and Art Gallery, and the UK Government through the UK Shared Prosperity Fund, the Roundabout Project is developing and installing multiple art interventions in the Chapel Ash Island underpass of Wolverhampton, including light, sound, sculpture, murals, AR, and a community garden. The aim is to provide a publicly accessible and free event space for the community to use and bring art into the public realm. As part of this transformative project, internationally acclaimed sculptor Luke Perry will unveil four monumental steel sculptures created in collaboration with the local community. Hosted by the Asylum Art Gallery Limited, the unveiling event promises to mark an exciting milestone for the project, featuring performances by local musicians, poets and dancers of Wolverhampton. Among the confirmed performers is Bangura dancer Sohan Kaylee, who performed at the London 2012 Olympics and Birmingham 2022 Commonwealth Games. He will perform traditional Punjabi Bhangra and say a few words, paying homage to the significance of the dance in Wolverhampton during the 1980s and 1990s. A spokeswoman for Asylum Art Gallery said, "Highlighting the local significance of each sculpture, performers will pay tribute to the themes within each one. Notably, the sculpture Recovery by Luke Perry and co-designed by hyper-local artist Matt Lloyd explores themes of addiction and recovery. Performances by volunteers and clients of local organisation Suit Services will reflect the complexities of addiction and dynamism of recovery introduced through the words within the sculpture itself." Throughout his residency for the Roundabout Project, Luke Perry collaborated closely with Wolverhampton's diverse communities so that his work in the Chapel Ash Island underpass can reflect the mix of important issues and cultural ecology of the area. Each sculpture pays homage to a different community group and allows pedestrians to encounter important parts of the Wolverhampton's history they might otherwise not, from the Black Arts Movement to minority workers' rights. To find out more about the event on May 19th and to reserve tickets, go to theasylumartgallery.com.
Now, from all that music and dance from a city centre underpass to something a little more soothing and tranquil from Dudley Zoo and Castle, who have been officially accredited for their work in making its 40-acre site more inclusive for people with sensory needs. The Castle Hill attraction is the first zoo to receive an autism-friendly certification from Dimensions, one of the country's largest not-for-profit organisations supporting people with learning disabilities and autism, which also provided free training for zoo staff. Zoo manager Matt Lewis said, "We're committed to being as accessible as possible, and we've been working hard for this to happen. We're incredibly proud to be the first zoo certified as autism-friendly by Dimensions, and we thank them for their continued support and advice. As part of its ongoing DEAI, Diversity, Equity, Accessibility, Inclusion work, the zoo will be holding its first pre-book-only autism-friendly quiet morning on Sunday, May the 19th, for guests who would prefer a calmer environment. The zoo will open at 9 a.m. and all music and background sounds in indoor areas will be turned off for 2 hours. The site's land train will also begin running later in the day and a quiet room will be available. Additional signage and information boards designed to help visitors identify various sensory environments have already been installed across the site, and the zoo has already taken delivery of several sensory bags, which include headphones and sensory fidget toys. A new, simple illustrated social story has also been uploaded to the zoo's website, allowing visitors to prepare for a visit. Matt added, "We understand a visit to the zoo can be daunting for those who may struggle with crowds and the different noises and smells associated with a zoo environment. We hope these new initiatives we're putting in place will allow more people to be able to enjoy a day out at DZC, discovering about the natural world around us."
Up next, we hear from Helen, who, as usual, has our latest Beacon update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from Beacon, back with your weekly update, and this week is a Colour Run special. Well, that's because from seasoned runners to enthusiastic families, fantastic fundraisers have come together to help people live well with sight loss at the Beacon Centre's Family Fun Colour Run. The annual fundraiser, which featured almost 250 runners, took place at Wolverhampton's East Park on Sunday, May 12th, in aid of the Beacon Centre for the Blind charity. The 5K event transformed East Park into a spectacle of colours, with participants covered in coloured powder as they made their way around the course. And all funds raised went to support the work of our charity. Everyone who finished got to take a medal home, and participants were able to indulge themselves after the race with Project Donut in attendance. I've got some of those myself, very nice, along with local ice cream van James's Ices. They were also entertained by representatives from Kimber Colts, who took along a speed gun for people to check how fast they could hit a football. Firefighters from Fallings Park Fire Station were also on hand to give youngsters a chance to look around a fire engine. Sarah Dovey, fundraising manager at Beacon, said, "We were overwhelmed by the support and enthusiasm displayed by everyone who came along. It's been wonderful to see the community come together, have fun, and contribute to a cause that touches more than 8,000 lives across Wolverhampton alone." Now, thanks to the efforts of runners and their sponsors, around £500 has been raised just in sponsorship, and we'll be collating the total amount raised during the event over the next few days. Mrs. Dovey added, "We'd like to thank everyone who took part and helped raise funds for our cause, and we also appreciate all the support of our volunteers who dedicated their time and efforts to make sure the event ran smoothly." Beacon also thanked local company Absolute Apparel Limited, which donated t-shirts for participants to wear at the event.
Thanks for that update, Helen. Next up, we have another block of local news. And up first, we hear from Christine.
Households in England will change the way they recycle under new, simpler bin collection rules, the government says. The Environment Department, DEFRA, announced on Friday that the same materials will be collected from homes, workplaces and schools across the country in order to end the confusion caused by councils operating different systems. The new rules will mean people will be able to put plastic, metal, glass, paper and card in one bin. Councils will also be able to co-collect food and garden waste. The new measures will mean households can stop checking which materials their specific council will accept for recycling, DEFRA said. It added that the measures will reduce complexity for waste collectors and boost recycling rates. Elsewhere, the government said it is supporting councils to increase the frequency of collections to prevent bins from cluttering streets. A minimum backstop will be introduced so that councils are expected to collect black bin waste at least fortnightly alongside weekly food waste collections, it announced. Recycling Minister Robbie Moore said, "We all want to do our bit to increase recycling and reduce the amount of waste sent to landfill. But a patchwork of different bin collections across England means it can be hard to know what your council will accept. Our plans for simpler recycling will end that confusion, ensuring that the same set of materials will be collected regardless of where you live." Paul Vansden, Chief Executive of the Industry Council for Packaging and the Environment, Inkpen, said, "Householders can take this government announcement as a pledge that, wherever we live across the nation, our local councils will all speedily implement recycling collections of the full range of materials that will match on-pack recycling labels citizens rely on for guidance. The plans will apply to all homes in England, including flats," DEFRA said.
Now, from the recycled to the flushed away, where a worse-for-wear Ken doll, looking a bit different from the Ryan Gosling version, is just one of the many unusual and unpleasant discoveries made in our sewers by the region's water company. Severn Trent has revealed a list of the top 10 strangest things its workers have pulled out of sewers across the region, with many likely to leave people scratching their heads as to how on earth they got there. Toys feature prominently on the list, with Gosling's plastic clone, one of those fished out, along with a Dora the Explorer, who went on an adventure not likely to make it to the TV screen. Other items found, bizarrely, included pieces of a garden shed, false teeth, underwear, a chopped-up bed frame, glasses, wallets, keys, cutlery, and car tyres. But the funny list does come with an important message, with Severn Trent asking people to think about what is being put into the sewers. Grant Mitchell, sewer blockages leader for Severn Trent, said, "Over the years we have seen so many things making their way through the sewers. All you have to do is sift through the skips of unflushable items that are filtered out of the treatment process at our sewage treatment works, and you will be able to find all sorts. How some of this stuff has got in there is anyone's guess, but it makes the job pretty entertaining for everyone. But it does come with a very important message for everyone to be careful what you're putting in the sewers, as it can cause messy and costly problems for all our customers. Although we see items like this at times, the things we see the most that cause blockages are wet wipes and other unflushable items, such as nappies and sanitary products. We would urge everyone to keep in mind that only the three P's should be put down the toilet: pee, poo and paper, and bin everything else. In the past year, waste crews at the water company have managed and cleared an astonishing 28,782 blockages. One of the biggest offenders of blockages is wet wipes. Even some that say flushable or biodegradable on the packaging don't break down like toilet paper. Other problem items include kitchen roll, cotton buds, nappies and sanitary products. Last week, the government announced it will be introducing new world-leading legislation to ban wet wipes containing plastic. The new law will make it illegal to sell wet wipes containing plastic in England, and Severn Trent has backed the plans. Wet wipes and other unflushable items cause massive issues when flushed, including blockages that back up and cause sewage to flood into homes, something which is not nice for householders and costly to fix, so everyone is being asked to be a binner, not a blocker. To get people thinking about what should and shouldn't be put down the toilet and sink, Severn Trent is launching Sewer Stories, showcasing the work that waste teams do to keep sewers clean and some of the weird things they find down in the sewers, which has included everything from false teeth to car tyres. For further information and advice about blockages, visit www.stwater.co.uk/my-supply-sewer-stories.
And our sewers may not be big on the agenda, but the University of Wolverhampton will host this year's International Youth Council Climate Summit. The event between the 23rd and 25th of July will look at climate change, creating a greener environment and developing skills and education for green entrepreneurs. There will be debates, workshops and presentations that aim to inspire and empower young leaders. The university said it expected delegates to attend from all around the world. David Wedge, Deputy Head of Alumni Relations, said the university was incredibly proud to be hosting the summit because it brings together so many important and highly relevant themes vital to the university and the communities we support. He added, "From green technologies to international collaboration, we share the vision of the IYC. And we are particularly pleased that this collaboration has come about through an alumnus of the university." The Youth Council supports young people around the world in all United Nations members countries.
Now it's time to test your knowledge, as we have the quiz questions for this edition brought to us by Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, these are your questions. Here we go. Question 1. Which famous source originated in Birmingham? Question 2. How much of UK's jewellery is made in Brum? Question 3. Which is the UK's busiest theatre? Question 4. Who wrote The Lord of the Rings? Question 5. What famous train did Reverend Wilbert de Vere Audrey invent? And question 6. Where was the first ever Odeon built? I will be back with you later in the show with all your answers, but for now, best of luck!
Cheers for those questions, Mina. I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news.
The stories of Black Country folk are set to be told through music as part of a radio show. Broadcaster Tim Beach has been talking to people from across the region for his show Inside Track, which goes out every Tuesday on Wolverhampton Community Radio. The show follows the theme of the BBC Radio 4 programme Desert Island Discs, and sees those being interviewed for the show picking between 8 and 10 songs, which Tim then uses to tell stories about their lives. He said it was about capturing the accents, the words, the experiences and people of the local area, and hearing what they have to say. He also said that as a local boy, it was great to talk about an area he thought was very special, and said it was important to capture the oral history of it. He said, "I was born in Walsall and grew up in Bloxwich and worked all of my BBC broadcasting career and commercial radio in and around the West Midlands area. And it's a wonderful area full of rich stories. There's something very special about capturing oral history as opposed to writing it down, as you don't get the pauses and emphasis, which can really reveal an awful lot. So it brings out a personality that makes a difference. I think it's really important that we can capture the vocabulary changes as well, as over time words that people use go completely out of fashion. And I think of my grandfather and some of the phrases he used, and they are words you never hear today. He said the only qualification to be on the program was that you were a human being from the area, and encouraged people to get in touch as he wanted to hear their stories. He said, in the end, we've all grown up and lived in this area, and we all have that shared experience in common. No matter what age we are, and no matter what our background is, we all have, being from the Black Country, in common. And when people come into the studio, we're all talking from a similar base. It's an absolute pleasure to do the show, and I love doing it, as it really is a privilege to meet people. To find out more and to get in touch, email tim@wcrfm.com. The show airs on 101.8 FM, DAB Digital Radio and online.
And this could be music to many ears, as a new centre to provide access to music education for children is going to be established in the Black Country. The Black Country Music Hub will be one of 43 taking part in the national scheme organised by Arts Council England. Dudley Council said it would work with council and music services in Walsall and Wolverhampton and not-for-profit SIPS Music and Education Service in Sandwell. Using £1.9 million in government funding, the authority said it would invest in new instruments, equipment and technology. The money will also support orchestral lessons in school, where all children and young people in a class are able to learn to play an instrument. The hubs were originally created in 2012 to enable access to education for young people, allowing them to learn instruments and to develop their talents. Brian Cape, Chief Executive at SIPS Education, said he welcomed the news, which gave the Black Country a powerful voice on the national stage. Kieran O'Donnell, Head of Music Service at City of Wolverhampton Council, added, "I'm delighted that our collective application has been successful. This will offer continuity of funding and reassurance to our local schools that the services they receive from the music service can continue. Being part of something bigger across the Black Country opens up great potential to develop even broader and stronger partnerships to benefit our children."
B, C, T, N. Dial it high, dial it low. It's the Black Country News on your weekly show. Perhaps we should leave it to the experts, as a cheerleading team from Wolverhampton has managed to come sixth at the Cheerleading Worlds, despite rebuilding the team from scratch. SA Academy Neon, made up of 16 girls, competed in the under-18 level 5 category, one of the higher levels of difficulty in the sport. The Cheerleading Worlds brings together more than 10,500 athletes from 25 nations at the Walt Disney World Resort, Florida. Coaches said it was quite the journey to get to the famous blue mat after most of the previous athletes had retired. "Starting the team from scratch in September, we had to build the team from basics," says SA Academy's cheer director, Lauren Gray. "There were only three athletes who had been to the competition before. Worlds is the pinnacle of the sport until cheerleading goes to the Olympics," Ms. Gray told the BBC. "I think this is the biggest event that there will be in cheerleading. Every athlete's dream is to make the world's floor." Coming in sixth in the final was beyond expectations, she said, since the team had been proud enough just to get to day two, the finals. The athletes had changed their routine on one of the resort's football fields the night before the semi-finals, in a bid to make sure they made it through. "I'd got all the team gathered in the villa where we were staying to let them know," continued Ms. Gray. "They literally were screaming and collapsed on the floor. One of our athletes said it was the best thing she'd ever done. She was actually planning to go to university next year, and now she's not sure whether she's taking a gap year so she can do it again." The team has a competition at the end of June, which will give them the opportunity to secure a place at the Worlds 2025. "I think we will keep seeing growth from the team and hopefully secure a bid to go again next year and continue the legacy," Ms. Gray added.
More local news to follow, but now
we have another bulletin of practical information and sight loss tips from Pete.
If you're struggling with reading and need a magnifier, have you ever considered a video magnifier, or sometimes known as a digital magnifier? Well, Beacon have a range of video magnifiers that you can come in and try. Now, a video magnifier, you can increase or decrease the magnification so you can turn it up a bit, or you can turn it up quite a lot to help you read. You can change contrast settings on a video magnifier, so you can look at something in true colour, or you could change the contrast to black on white, or white on black, or yellow on black, or black on yellow. It's whatever works best for you, so there's a range of combinations there that you can try to find the right one. You can also freeze images on a video magnifier. So let's say there's something in your fridge, a piece of some food. You could take a little picture, because the angle's a bit difficult to read of it, and then bring the magnifier away and then zoom it up. So if it's something like the sell-by dates or ingredients on food, you can read it comfortably there. So video magnifiers range from small handheld magnifiers you can sit comfortably in an armchair to read with, up to medium-sized ones, which are about the size of laptops, and then there's desktop magnifiers with big, large 24-inch screens, which really make magnification strong. So, if you would like to try a video magnifier to see if that would help you, you're very welcome to. Just call Beacon's Sight Loss Advisors for an appointment. And remember, bring something you struggle to read with you. So if you'd like to try a video magnifier, give us a call on 01902 880 111 and ask for a Sight Loss Advisor. 01902 880 111.
Up next in this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we have another Bake Along session written and presented by Penny Melville Brown, who is also known as the Blind Baker. This Bake Along provides both the recipe and instructions in an entertaining and encouraging manner to bring the joy of home baking to all listeners, regardless of their level of sight. So, ready or not, here it crumbs.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, I'm Penny Melville Brown, the Blind Baker. I won an international prize that enabled me to cook all round the world. I've written all the recipes up, I've made hundreds of videos, and I blog and write about recipes all the time. There's even a cookbook. You can find out more about me at www.pennymelvillebrown.com. Hello again. I wanted to share with you one of my favourite standby recipes. And the joy of this one, it doesn't take very long to prepare. I use it to use up all that end of week fruit that I've got hanging about. The prep is quick. It takes quite a long time to cook, but you could just walk away and do something else. And it produces puddings for a week or more. And so this is my baked fruit salad. And what I need for this when I'm cooking it is either a slow cooker, which has got a low setting, or I have oven-proof Pyrex casserole dishes, which have got a lid, or I could cover it with foil if I don't have them. But oven-proof is a good idea. And so it's really just a lot of dried fruit and a lot of fresh fruit all thrown into the pot with a bit of fruit juice to give it some liquid, and then cooked very slowly. So here goes. I go and raid my store of dried fruit. So a couple of handfuls of sultanas, a couple of handfuls of raisins, perhaps 10 dates chopped up, perhaps 10 pieces of dried apricot chopped up, 10 figs chopped up. If I'm feeling mad and extravagant, I might put in 10 pieces of crystallized ginger, again, chopped up. That's my basis. On top of that, I'm going to have a fresh pineapple, if I can get hold of one, and I have quite a dinky gadget that will core it and skin it all in one go. So that's not too difficult to do. Or you could use a tin of pineapple, preferably in juice rather than a sugar syrup. A couple of apples, cored and just chopped into cubes. The same with a couple of pears, two oranges, and I'm going to zest them so I can get all the zinginess from their skin and their juice. And then my last ingredient at this stage is apple juice. And I'm really sorry, I can't tell you how much apple juice you're going to need. Really, you're going to pour in enough so it doesn't come over the top of the fruit. And you could do that by just feeling how the level of the apple juice is coming up. You don't want to drown the fruit because they'll give up their own juice. So be slightly meaner than you might want to be and just put in enough juice to give them something to keep their feet in, but not drown in. And literally all of that goes into your slow cooker or your oven-proof dish. I cook it in the slow cooker on low for about 5 hours. If I'm cooking it in the oven, I'm going to set it at about 130 degrees centigrade or gas mark one, and it's going to have that foil cover tight over the top. And it's going to be in there 3 hours. Longer won't make a lot of difference. And slowly you'll start smelling this wonderful fruit salad as it cooks over all those hours. You won't lose the integrity of the fruit. It'll still be soft, but it won't be mushy. It'll be delicious. And it can be divided up into boxes or other containers with lids and put in the fridge. And then when you're ready to eat some, take out a portion, whack it in the microwave and heat it up, which is wonderful. Or you can have it cold. And the joy of this is that unlike a fresh fruit salad, it will last a good week, especially if you've got it in separate boxes. So each time you're opening a box, you're not letting in more air and more spores or whatever is in the air to your precious pudding. There's lots of variations you can do on this. I've made this by adding a couple of star anise. Perhaps you want to put in some cloves, a cinnamon stick, whatever suits your taste buds. I've put in a couple of bananas. You can put in bottled apricots or tinned apricots, peaches, whatever you like. I do lots of bottling in the summer. I've put in a whole melon that I've peeled and deseeded and chopped up. So This is a way of using up what you've got left in the fruit bowl with some basics that you would use in the store cupboard all the time and producing a really delicious pudding that you can have all week or is absolutely loved by guests. It's going to be one of your new standbys, so please do give it a try. I hope you enjoy this recipe. I hope you give it a try. If you've got ideas or suggestions for future recipes, please get in touch with me. You can always make contact through my website, www.pennymelvillebrown.com. And happy baking to all of you too. Bye-bye.
TNF Soundings.
Up next, it's trivia time, brought to us by Flashback Roger and his Did You Know feature. Take it away, Roger.
Hello again, everyone. Well, this week will be quite a quick-fire list of interesting facts about Birmingham. Some we already know, I'm sure, but there'll be some that you didn't know, and some that'll serve as reminders too. So here goes. Now then, did you know that? Iconic brands like Bird Custard, Cadbury Chocolate, Bourneville Drinking Chocolate, HP Sauce and Typhoo Tea all started life in Birmingham, and Brum has the largest public library in Europe. It also has the youngest population in Europe, with almost 40% being made up of under 25s. The Jewellery Quarter produces 40% of all jewellery in the UK, the highest concentration in Europe. Birmingham is also the birthplace of the Balti and home to over 100 Balti houses. It also has the most Michelin star restaurants in the UK outside of London, and believe it or not, you can get to over 90% of the UK from Birmingham in under 4 hours. And Birmingham Museum and Art Gallery has the world's largest collection of Pre-Raphaelite paintings. There are over 50 festivals across the city every year, and Birmingham Hippodrome is the UK's busiest theatre with over 520,000 visitors each year. Birmingham was also home to great scientists and inventors like Matthew Boulton, James Watt and William Murdoch, that they were leading Birmingham to be the first manufacturing town in the world. There was a point in time, actually it was in 1875, when 3/4 of all pens in the world had nibs made in Birmingham. And The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings are based on places and people in Moseley, where the author J.R.R. Tolkien lived. And Thomas the Tank Engine was invented in Birmingham by Wilbert Vere Audrey, who was Reverend at St. Nicholas Church in Kings Norton. And Pirrie Bar was the home for the world's first ever Odeon cinema in 1930, when the word Odeon stands for Oscar Deutsch Entertains Our Nation. And Birmingham was the birthplace of heavy metal bands with the likes of Black Sabbath, Judas Priest, and lead singer of Led Zeppelin originating from the city. Also The Streets, UB40, Wizard, Laura Mavoula and Duran Duran originated from Birmingham too. Well, who'd have thought it, eh? World famous names, inventions and places, all from just a few miles away. For all I can say is that Brum might boast all these things and more, but our black country has Aenach and Aly, Dudley Zoo, the Lenny Henry, Teddy Grays and Faggots and Pays. What more dare I proudly say? In road, I'm off. I'm going to get me a good pot of typhoo and dunk a few ginger nuts for a change. Till next week then, I'll just say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own Sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here, and hasn't it been beautiful recently, especially last weekend? Hope you've all been able to relax and enjoy some of the warm sunny days. Unfortunately, the weather for this week ahead is not looking quite so glorious, as it's looking highly likely that a spell of unsettled weather will move into the region, bringing with it plenty of rain. But on a positive note, temperatures will remain mild again, and we should see more sunny spells as we go through the week. In result, UV levels will remain medium. The sunrise and sunset times are 5 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:10 p.m. for the sunset. Friday, 17th of May, is forecast to have a wet start to the day, with a chance of sunny intervals breaking through in the afternoon, with light winds coming in from the west. Temperatures are forecast to actually do quite well and hit highs of 17 or 18 degrees. Moving on, and the sharp showers are going to be joining us for the weekend too. With drizzle lingering around for most of Saturday, Sunday sure is looking like the better day, with early showers clearing for a sunny day. This spell of sunshine should also last right through to Monday too. The breeze will be noticeable, but gentle, and temperatures will reflect this still very pleasant of 18 degrees. An unsettled pattern is forecast to continue as we go deeper into the week, with brief sunny intervals and long spells of rain. Potentially thundery storms expected from Tuesday, 21st of May, right through to Thursday, 23rd of May. Although the breeze will become stronger, the temperatures will remain pleasant at 18 degrees. So, there we have it, another mixed bag of weather ahead. As always, do take care and enjoy the weather.
Cheers for that weather update, Mina. Now it's time to find out how our local football teams have been getting on.
West Brom's display will have left Southampton content but also wary ahead of the second leg clash later this week. Express and Star's sports journalist Johnny Drury looks at three talking points to come from Albion's playoff semi-final first leg goalless draw with Southampton. Out of the blocks. It was a game that for long periods ebbed and flowed, with Southampton having a spell and then West Brom. From the off, it was always going to be interesting to see which way Albion were going to go, whether they were going to sit off and let Southampton dictate. However, from the first few seconds of the game, we could see that that was not going to be the case. Albion fired out of the traps, almost stunning Southampton with how rapid they were going forward, and that was the best thing Carlos Corberan's side could have done. Rather than sit off, invite pressure and let the Saints dictate, Albion stood up to them. That set the tone for Albion when they did attack and press, and it almost paid off. Press for success. As many talked about in the build-up to the game, Albion could have success by pressing Southampton at goal kicks. We know how much they like to play out from the back. It was evident all afternoon. There were a few occasions though where Albion just leant on them and they couldn't handle it. It wasn't as if Albion were pressing in huge numbers and making it impossible for Southampton to get out, but they were doing enough to cause them problems. Do that at St Mary's and get the home crowds on their back and anything could happen. Missed chance? For parts of this season, we have been talking about the fact Albion haven't had someone to get themselves in the right place at the right time. Despite all the good work Brandon Thomas Asante does, Albion don't have that instinctive poaching striker. It has been an issue all season, and again in this game. Tom Fellow set up two brilliant chances, one in the first half with a cutback, and in the second he hung a lovely cross up to the back post. They were begging for a striker to get on the end of them, but Albion don't have that instinctive nature in their armoury. With that today, it would have been a different story. Southampton delighted, but also wary. From the selection to, at times, their display, Southampton looked content with a goalless draw. Don't get me wrong, they had a chance. A superb one, in fact, with Flynn Downes in the first half. Ross Stewart's deflected effort was well kept out by Alex Palmer in the second half, but aside from that, they rarely troubled Albion despite having more possession. Also, given Albion's late pressure, I'd imagine Russell Martin and his staff will be delighted to get out of here all square. That looked like it could well have been the game plan, because they will be confident in taking Albion back to the South Coast and getting the job done. However, the performance Albion put in today was unlike the two previous league displays against the Saints, and that will make them more wary. Albion and Southampton will do battle at St Mary's on Friday for a place at Wembley. And with no battle left to fight, another limp display from Wolves over the weekend left Gary O'Neill admitting he needs to adjust Wolves' playing style after a disappointing run of 6 losses in 9 Premier League games. A number of glaring defensive errors saw Wolves hand Crystal Palace a plethora of chances in an unconvincing 3-1 defeat. Many of the errors and avoidable mistakes came from Wolves playing out from defence, and O'Neill says he needs to address what style his current group is capable of playing. "There's loads to learn from this and the last couple weeks," O'Neill said. "The first 2/3 of the season, the style really suited the group and helped them in games. But what I've learned in the last few weeks is maybe we need to adjust a few things with what we have available to us. You won't win too many Premier League games playing like we did in the first half. So it's one for me to help the players understand what's needed in situations like that. We need to find a way to be better." When asked specifically if he means the mistakes when playing out from defence, O'Neill added, "The players are unbelievably brave and they keep playing no matter what. Crystal Palace pressed man for man really aggressively, and we're on the side trying to get them to play more direct, and they're reluctant to. We end up desperate to keep the ball. But if Crystal Palace go man for man and leave spaces, we need to be able to exploit it more quickly. We did it against Everton and Brentford before Chani went away. But Chani doesn't quite look the same yet. Him and Mateus Cunha, since they've come back from injury, don't quite look where they were before, understandably. Maybe the team's understanding isn't quite where it was. I can't keep doing the same thing and getting results like that, so we need to look at it. It's not a crisis and we won't rip everything up and start again, but we need to adjust to the group we have now. Dawson and Pedro being out, although it doesn't sound a lot, is big for us with a squad as small as ours. The first thing is whether we can improve the group in the summer, but top of my list will be what I do to the group and what I can produce from the group we have." After a poor first half, Wolves did recover to have a better second half, but O'Neill was still unhappy with his side's showing in the final home game of the season. "I'm really disappointed," O'Neill said. "There's been a few first halves like that recently that are really disappointing. We beat ourselves. We started the game okay and had some control with the ball, but that turned us into having the ball around our goal, and Palace managed to gain some good momentum from just pressing. They regained the ball and have good attacking players that punished us. In the second half, to be fair to the players, they had a go. We were a bit more pragmatic and went a bit more direct, which got us up the pitch a bit easier. We scored a good goal and had some momentum, but it's happened to us a few times this year where we then concede fairly quickly afterwards. Wolves now head to Anfield on Saturday for their final fixture of the Premier League season and what should be an emotional end of an era farewell party for all connected to Liverpool Football Club, as they now look to send manager Jurgen Klopp off in style. Anyone remember Sir Alex Ferguson's last game in charge of Manchester United 11 years ago? Just a quiet little send-off at the Hawthorns that finished 5-5. Funnily enough, that too was on the 19th of May.
Now, here come the quiz
answers,
and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Feeling confident? How will you score? Let's see. Question 1. Which famous source originated in Birmingham? And the answer, HP Source. Question 2. How much of UK's jewellery is made in Brum? And the answer, 40%. Question 3. Which is the UK's busiest theatre? And the answer here is Birmingham Hippodrome. Question 4. Who wrote The Lord of the Rings? And the answer, J.R.R. Tolkien. Question 5. What famous train did Reverend Wilbert de Vere Audrey invent? And the answer, Thomas the Tank Engine. And finally, question 6. Where was the first ever Odeon built? And the answer, Perry Bar. Did you get them all right? If not, not to worry, as I will be back next week to test you all once again. Bye for now.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!